I've got guys that are engineers. I've got pilots. I have hardscape landscapers that are doing this. They love Jesus. They love his word. They're going to do it differently than me, but they're pointing people to Jesus. They're using God's word. It's not a, the curriculum is right there. Jesus had a four-stage discipleship process. It was come and see, come and follow, come and be with me, and go and bear fruit.
This is the Build Groups podcast, where we equip and resource group leaders and pastors in the local church to make disciples with one another together. My name is Adam Ehrlichman, your host. Here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Build Groups podcast. My name is Adam Ehrlichman, your host. With us today, Matt Moore, our co-host. Matt, how are you doing today?
You're doing fantastic, Adam. It's good to see you, man, and good to be back on and doing a podcast today.
Me as well. Guys, we have got a really, really good guest in the sense of this one can be very meaningful for me. We've got Pastor Jeff Scott with us, who has been in ministry on staff at one church, Heritage Baptist Church, for almost 30 years. He's been a member there for almost 40 years, and he was my discipleship pastor. And so this is very exciting for me to get to interview him and get to talk and to get to share this with you guys, because I am a personal benefactor and recipient of his ministry. I've gotten to see it at a front row seat and get to experience the fruit of his investment into my life and to share that and spread that into other people's lives and replicate the things that I learned from him. In many ways, Pastor Jeff is like my spiritual father in so many ways, in what he's invested and taught me at a very formative stage in my Christian life. I got saved at 19. And so 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, he invested deeply into me. At some point, I said several years there. We're at Heritage for 4 years, but I couldn't remember the age range. So this is going to be a very meaningful interview for me. I think it'll be very helpful to get to hear from a discipler, a disciplee, the one who's giving, the one who's receiving, and then going and replicating. And so Pastor Jeff, he is a graduate of DTS and Liberty University. He got his doctorate at Dallas Theological Seminary. He has multiple master's degrees from Liberty University. He served as the adult ministry pastor for 25 years at Heritage Baptist Church, and now currently serves as the pastor of Biblical Theological Resourcing for the last 4 years and continues to do so. Pastor Jeff, I would love for you to just give a little bit more introduction of yourself, say hi to our audience, and just to let them get to know you a little bit more.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm excited to be here. Been looking forward to this and love talking about discipleship. Somebody took the time to pour into me as a late teen into my early college years, and it got into my blood and into my DNA, and discipleship is what I cannot not do. Horrible English, but I think it communicates deeply my passion for what I believe God has called each and every one of us to do. And that's to pass the faith on to the next generation. So I am a first-generation believer, actually. My dad was military for the first 16 years of my life. He retired from the Air Force and traveled around a lot and lived in 17 different places the first 17 years of my life, and then came to Liberty at the age of 17 to be a business major. God called me to preach that first year, called me into ministry, and changed my major, stayed there, got a couple master's degrees from Liberty, and then God chose to wait until I was in my early 30s before launching me actually into full-time ministry. But meanwhile, serving the local church, have a deep passion for the church and a deep love for the Church of Jesus.
I love it. I love it. So, Pastor Jeff, could you, before we jump into getting into some more, you know, more of the ministry background and some of those things, and I want you to kind of give some context to your experience. You're in a different role now than what you have done previously for 25 years, but you're still doing a lot of the same things. And audience, for those of you listening, if this is the first episode you're hearing with us, what we tend to do is we ask a lot of questions to try and give you framework, some breakdown of the whole overall church's groups ministry, and give you context for how they operate, that it's different from you, so you can pick out good principles and apply them properly into your church context, not try to copy and paste something that doesn't fit in your church context. But with Pastor Jeff today, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to dive into something very specific in his ministry and what he has done that's been a part of his ministry, so we won't cover the entire aspect of it. But before we do dive into what you call MARC groups, where you've taken hundreds of young men through the Gospel of Mark, studying making disciples the way Jesus did. And I've continued that trend myself, and that's one of the main things I do when I come into a church, or I'm serving on a staff, and I do it even now that I'm not on a staff and a full-time church consultant. It's just now who I am. I can't not do it, as you said. But before we jump into that, what's one of your hobbies, Pastor? Like, what's one of your favorite things that you do that's outside of ministry?
Well, yeah, one of the things that I do is I play golf a couple times a week, actually. Part of it is exercise. Part of it is just connected to a godly group of men I think there's six churches represented in our golf group. And so we're called the Dew Scrapers, because we get up at sunup and, we walk 18 holes of golf, usually Friday, Saturday. And that resets me and recharges me, part of my Sabbath rhythms. And so I'm not very good at it, but I enjoy the walk, enjoy the company, and every once in a while I'll hit a good shot. So, but that's a hobby that I really enjoy, that really recharges me, plus gives me exercise.
Yeah, I remember when we went golfing and I was horrible, and I was like, man, there's no way he's ever going to want to talk to me again. This was so embarrassing. I was that bad. And
yeah, but you saw my game at the same time. How bad?
Well,
it was.
You know, maybe we have different memories of how that went, but I'll accept that. I definitely didn't keep the scorecard, so there's no evidence.
practice round, right?
No, there you go.
Yeah, we barely made it off the driving range, right? So,
great.
I love that. Yeah, always good to have a hobby outside. And I love that you're connected with other pastors too. I think that says a lot. We may actually dive into some of that a little.
Well, actually, these guys are just a mixture of group. I've got a diesel mechanic. I've got some engineers, a couple divinity professors from Liberty, a couple salespeople. It's just a mixed group of men that allow me to be Jeff, pastor.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Now that you've brought it up, we're going to go there later on now. Hey, maybe we can ask this question. Now we're going to ask that question, because I think there's a lot more to pull back there. That's good. So, because I personally was at Heritage Baptist Church for 4 years, my wife and I and our kids, I'm going to give a little bit of context that will help expedite our conversation. And then I want to focus in on the area where you've invested an immense amount that I have found personal life transformation, investment, really an area where I caught the vision that made me say, I love what Pastor Jeff does. I think I want to do that for the rest of my life. And it was in that space that I experienced that. I saw that, and that passion clicked for me and it connected, and I put it into action. And so, in your ministry, right, there's primarily with the groups ministry was mostly on campus. It was mid-sized groups. There was, I think they were called discipleship communities, and sort of a little bit more of a Sunday school model, where there was teacher, there was a director of that group, there were other people who served in that way. And so very common model, very effective model, very helpful, and building community, instructing. And then along with that, you had these MARC groups as well.
There is a volunteer crisis in the church today. What are you doing about it? Build Groups Coaching and Consulting helps churches build a custom, discover, develop, and deploy new volunteers and leaders process to increase your volunteer base by 30 to 50% in 6 to 12 months. We do this with churches over and over again, all shapes and sizes, all across the country. To learn more about how we can change your ministry world, deepen your bench so that you never feel the pinch or pain of not having enough volunteers or leaders in your ministry again, go to buildgroups.net/consult.
Is there anything else that you would add into sort of your 25 years of adult ministry? There's tons of things that you've done, and I just trying to give a high level view for people of what your group's ministry model was during your time there, of what I experienced.
Yeah, that's a good memory of your time here. We're still doing our discipleship communities. They're all under Pastor David now, with my shifting into this role. But I also was over our men's, women's, young at heart, Wednesday night electives, just a lot of moving pieces, a lot of administration. And I think as a result of just us getting to the size that we're at and seeing the effectiveness of the groups, the MARC groups in particular, that as we grew and found somebody to take that adult ministries role, it allowed me to shift into the specialized role that I'm into now. I'm a believer in mid-sized groups. I'm a believer in small groups coming out of the mid-sized groups. I don't think everybody's wired for big groups, and I don't think everyone is wired for small groups. I think we need to provide venues and environments for both, as long as discipleship moves forward in that. So my ministry was very, very, very broad up until about 4 years ago. Now it's very, very focused in what I get to do.
Yeah. And when I was there, I think the church was around 1600 to 1800 in size. And I think you said now you guys are between 2200 to 2400 on a weekend average. So that's a whole lot. That's a whole lot of people to keep up with in all those different ministries, men's, women's, Wednesday nights and Sunday morning. And so, yes. So now David, who is in your role, he is one of your disciplees, correct?
Yes. He came out of one of my groups and, took over our Converge, which is one of our college classes, just thrived in that environment. And, he was a perfect fit for my role, gifted differently than me. He's gifted far more administratively than I am. And so sitting back in this role that I'm in now, where I'm in support of a lot of the other pastoral areas and ministry areas, I am overjoyed at watching David just thrive in my old role, and very thankful that he's got it and I don't, and I get to do what I get to do now. So yeah, mine is very specialized.
Yes. Well, this is a shout out to David. Thank you from Pastor Jeff. There you go. Right.
So absolutely.
That's great. So now let's dive in. Let's get into the meat of where I know a lot of our conversation is going to take us, Pastor Jeff. These MARC groups that you have, where you go through the gospel MARC, could you tell us more about what those are? What kind of birthed the idea for you to go, I think I want to start groups like this, and what you guys do in those, and just kind of start with that.
Yeah, I took one of my first classes at DTS in my doctorate ministry program was with Dr. Howard Hendricks. And I sat in the front and I purposely picked his brain during the class breaks and lunchtime just about discipleship and what he was doing. And he really challenged me to stop doing discipleship one-on-one and start to do it in small groups. And that was quite the challenge and stretch for me, because most of my training up to that point and most of the reading that I'd done was really geared towards one-on-one. And I can remember asking him at one of the breaks, after catching myself and regrouping about one-on-one discipleship is not biblical, was basically the content that I heard. That may not have been what he said, but he just, so how do you do it? You know, and he just walked me through how he was doing some small groups that were committed to more of long term, where they had a sunrise and a sunset to them, but allowing those groups to really formulate deep relationships with one another and build continuity, really moving people into becoming, students of the word, but really students of who Jesus is and how Jesus trained the 12. And so, yeah, that was the impetus for doing that. I spent a year just in my own personal Bible study, digging into the Gospel of Mark, because that's what he recommended. And he told me to become a master of the master. And so I spent a whole year in my own my own quiet time, for lack of a better term, but my own time with Jesus, just reading through, studying through the Gospel of Mark, and began gathering groups of men, groups of three. I've got a group right now that's up to 12, and just really pouring into them. And we take just the divisions of the English Bible, like Mark 1:1-8 is one section. And then we just take each of the divisions and spend time sitting around the table. I read the text, and then we go, okay, guys, what are you seeing? What is Jesus doing? How is he training the 12? Why did Jesus do this miracle? What was the purpose for the disciples? He was equipping them to be the foundation of the early church. And I wanted to know, how was he doing that? What was he giving them? And constantly coming back to that topic of how did Jesus train the 12? But yet at the same time, I want the guys to know and to be overwhelmed by the question that the disciples asked, particularly in Mark 4, when he was calming the storm. Peace, be still. The wind calmed, the waves stopped. Who then is this? And that is a constant theme that you will see through the Gospel of Mark, of the disciples coming to a greater understanding of who Jesus is. I don't want them to walk away with just discipleship principles. I want them to walk away with just an overwhelming amazement at who Jesus is. And if they do that, then I think they will catch Jesus' heart for the nations and catch the heart of just equipping and training the next generation. We're one generation away from total paganism. And if I don't pass the faith on, I think it's our responsibility to do that, every one of us. So.
Great, man. I love it. I love the just intentionality of being in the Word with people and how important that is. We have, at my local church, we have people come in all the time with, hey, this is what we should, this is what we should do for discipleship. And they bring in a program and say, this is what we should do. And, it's fascinating because everybody wants to bring to you what's changed their life.
Yeah.
That's the program they bring in, right?
Yep.
And, I've had people tell me, well, like, this works. Why are we reinventing the wheel? And I'm like, well, what's the wheel? It's a question we've asked. And the wheel is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. The wheel is individuals coming together, opening the Word of God and being in the Word of God. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And the Spirit of God being there. So that's fantastic.
How do you train small group leaders and teachers? Group Leader Training, a biblical manual for small group leaders and teachers in the local church, is a holistic 5-session training based on Acts 2:42-47 that trains group leaders to deepen community, encourage growth, mobilize group members to service and sharing of their faith with unbelievers. Course videos, belief assessments, and more resources are provided online with special access through the workbook. 50% off bulk orders is available exclusively on our website. To learn more, go to buildgroups.net/coming soon.
So if somebody goes through one of your Mark groups and let's say I showed up at Heritage and I said, man, I'm interested in going through this. What should I expect the outcome to be? What's the purpose? What would be like your elevator speech to me of like why someone should jump into one of these groups?
Yeah. Now my groups, I have an entry level expectation from them. The faith acrostic. I'm looking for faithful men who I am observing are here regularly digging in, pursuing Jesus, faithfully trying to figure out where they can serve and impact the church. That's F for faith. A is available. Do they have the availability to meet when I meet? My groups meet at 6:30 in the morning, about a mile from our church at Panera. They got a big table there, and we sit around the table, open up the Word. That's where we do it. So availability. And I've had some guys that aren't available at 6:30. And I've had some young guys that are saying, 6:30 in the morning? I didn't know there was a 6:30 in the morning. But it's amazing to me, how regular they are. And Adam, I'm not sure if you remember this, but if I got a guy that's coming and they don't show up at 6:30 and it's 6:40, I usually send them a text saying, "Good morning, sunshine," so that they know that I've missed them. And it's kind of the fun thing that I do with them. But availability,
I wouldn't know because I never got one of those texts. So I didn't know that you didn't know.
I can check my phone records that's okay. if you want that's me okay. to. Well, I is, intentionality, initiative. Are they going to take the initiative to be there, to dig in, to study, to participate, and to, you know, to do the next steps, to lean into that? So do they have initiative? The biggest one for me is teachable. Are they teachable? Are they willing to be teachable? I tell the guys, if I choose not to be teachable, I am choosing to fail. And if they're coming to the group with everything that they know, then that the group's probably not for them. I want them to be teachable. I want them to lean into it. I don't know everything. I want them to actually, I don't know anything. What can I learn from this? But also in their life, if we're going to have a conversation about purity or a conversation about doctrinal truth, I want them to be teachable and honest and open. So, and age is a heart for God. Do you love Jesus above any and every other affection in your life? More than your hobby, more than your job. Do you love Jesus? Do you have a heart for God? And that's the entry point for me. Into the groups. And then when they come into the groups, my expectation is a high level of accountability, regular attendance. I want to know that they're walking with Jesus during the week. What are you reading? Where are you studying? What is God teaching you? Purity. Guys, we're going to have an open, honest discussion about purity. Where are you? Sometimes those conversations take place at a different location, so they're not so public. But they know I'm going to randomly ask them, where are you at? And there's a place of safety there. They're able to text me, call me. The reality is we're all in that battle of purity, and I want a safe place for them to wrestle through that. But I deeply want them to understand, too, at the beginning, the purpose of the group is for you to know Jesus well and to walk away marveled at who he is. But I also want you to understand that I want you at some point to reproduce this in the lives of other people. So this is a model of reproduction. But I want to know what they're reading too. What books are influencing you? What are you doing outside the group? So, and I try to model that. They know I'm a reader. I'm a slow reader, but I'm a reader. And I want them to know what God is challenging me with and where I'm at. So I'm one of the group. I'm not the leader. I'm one of the group. I'm facilitating.
How many of these groups do you have going right now?
Currently, I have 5 going. I've got a couple that are getting ready to transition out. We're launching those guys out into their own groups. I've got one that I just started, which I'm really excited about. It's 10 guys that are heading into pastoral ministry that have committed to joining the church. They're actively involved. They're faithful here. And just started meeting with them. So very excited about that. So, yeah, so I've got 5 groups right now. So I'm working with probably about 25 to 30 guys.
That is awesome. So are there... So you're doing 5 groups yourself. Are yep. there, and there's other groups happening within the church as well from other men that are doing this as well that have reproduced it?
Yeah. For me to give you an account, I can't keep up with them. Yeah, there are quite a few groups going on. We've got other things that are going on as well. We have what we call disciple making teams that are really trying to capture young adults before they get out into their career paths, to really think about going to the nations. And so it's part of our pathway to the nations, our missions pipeline feeding. We're a deeply passionate church about going to the world. A third of our budget goes to missions.
Awesome. Jeff, what I love about this, you know, we speak a lot to small group pastors, and we also speak to people who are leading small group ministries, is that you, or I'm sorry, that are leading small groups themselves, not whole ministries, mm-hmm. is that you don't have to be a pastor to start this.
No.
You're doing.
No.
This can be faithful Joe at any church that sees the Great Commission and says, I need to invest in others.
Yep.
And what you need is you need your Bible, and you need men that fit your faith acrostic.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got guys that are engineers. I've got pilots. I have hardscape landscapers that are doing this. They love Jesus. They love his word. They're going to do it differently than me, but they're pointing people to Jesus. They're using God's word. It's not the curriculum is right there. Jesus had a 4-stage discipleship process. It was come and see, come and follow, come and be with me, and go and bear fruit. And A.B. Bruce was the first to produce that. The Navigators have used the model. Dr. Bill Hull, in his book, Jesus Christ Disciple Maker, walks you through that as well. So it's about establishing, equipping, and enabling, and then launching them out. And every group takes a different time sequence and path, and every guy is in a different place. So it's, some guys launch out. Adam is a great example of launching out earlier than some of the other guys launch out. Adam launched out pretty early from one of my groups. I've got guys that have, you know, by 3 years, I'm kicking them out of the mess, going, you've got what it takes, go do it.
Yep.
So a little more poking and prodding, but others are like, I gotta do this.
Yep. I was probably one, you're like, you should stay in the nest a little bit longer, Adam. Maybe just hide.
Honestly, yes, that was my thought when you launched out. It was a matter of by faith, trusting God that you were ready. And yeah, you modeled being ready. Yeah, I don't want to hold people back either.
Yeah, I don't sit still well, you know, but man, there were a few things and they stuck with me to this day, Pastor Jeff, that you would say again and again as we went through those times together, right? Every other week, 6:30 a.m., Panera Bread at the corner there. In Lynchburg, and some of those things that you said were, I learned more from you than you do from me during this time. And we would sit there and we'd just be like, there's no way we're getting so much. There's no way he's learning more than we, and then I think I did it for a year with you. And then I went and started a few of those with some of the college students in the ministry we're doing with the Bridge there. And one of the discipleship communities that we're helping lead and doing there. And then I think it hit me and I was like, okay, I see what he means.
Where do you find new volunteers and leaders? Build Groups offers a one-time 2-hour discover exercise virtually or in person with your church staff and team, and help you build a long list of potential new volunteers and leaders you can invite and onboard into a training process to deploy them into the specific ministry area that they are called to. We've helped churches build a list of nearly 400 names. If you would like to do the same and not feel the pinch and pains of volunteer holes every week, go to buildgroups.net/CI, select Discover Exercise, submit the form, and we'll fill your ministry bench.
So could you just expand on that a little bit, where you know, some of the things you said, like, I learn more from you than you do from me, and some of that with, I mean, cause there's people that I'm connected to still that I see are out there that you've invested into doing amazing things in world missions and pastoring, and I'm sure there's hundreds, if not, I mean, of people out there who you've invested into?
Yeah. I think there's a biblical, it's the Paul and Barnabas relationship that you see in the book of Acts. At one point, it was Barnabas investing into Paul. And then about halfway through the book of Acts, you begin to see that now Paul is investing into Barnabas. And so I realize that God's calling upon my life is unique. And I'm a second chair leader. I have no desire for the senior pastorate. I love serving others, and I expect guys to do far more than I do. I want them to do it better. I want to see them do greater things. And so, yeah, if I don't have a heart of being teachable, I learn from the guys all the time. They're different perspectives of as they're looking at the text that we're in for that morning, and they're saying, hey, this relates to this back in the Old Testament. And then I'm like, I've never seen that before. That's a great insight. It being honest and it's being true. It ties back into having a teachable heart. I can learn from anybody. And if I lose that aspect, I'm going to be a miserable discipler of people. I want to learn. I want to grow. I haven't arrived. Paul in Philippians 3 models that very clearly as well. He has not arrived. I have not attained. So, yeah, I'm pressing on. I can learn from anybody. So.
Man, that's great. That's great. So we've titled this podcast, the Build Groups Podcast. And, again, we talked to small group point people, small group leaders, but what's one thing you'd encourage, people to do in their local church to build groups?
It's interesting. Last week when I was meeting with the guys hitting into ministry, the group of 10, we talked about the first thing that I would do is when I stepped into a church, it wouldn't be what is the first sermon series I'm going to do. It's who are the men that I can pour into that will be the leaders in this church for the next generation that will long outlive me. Find those guys. That needs to be a priority. I still look for those guys. Now, when we have a new members class, I'm looking, who are the guys that could possibly be in my next group? We have a men's conference coming up next week or next month. And that my intent in going is who are the next group of guys that I can connect with at this conference that could be the next group of guys that I pour into. And so, one of the unique things that I get to do here also is I get to work with our global ministries department in equipping theologically our next generation of goers that are going to the nations. And it's a unique thing that I get to do. They have to write a doctrinal statement. And then at some point down the road, spend 90 minutes with our senior pastor, myself, our global ministries pastor and his wife. And they have a 90-minute doctrinal review where they come in with their Bible and a piece of paper, and they have to answer questions for 90 minutes about their theology. And I get to meet and equip and train them in that. So that's another aspect of discipleship that one of the things that I've been tasked with as well as moving forward is raising up the next generation of elders. Will come alongside the pastoral staff moving forward, lay elders, but also potential pastoral staff. But on the theological side of things, we want our elders to be theologically qualified. That's another area that I get to play around with. And well, play around is not the right word. It's the responsibility of doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these books behind me are paying off.
What a great responsibility. Yeah.
It's awesome. It's fun.
I love that the church there sees the value in that and has somebody who's had 30 years of faithful ministry in that role, investing in the younger generation to carry the torch. Like it's so needed. That's fantastic. This is our favorite question of the podcast. And that is, Can you just share with us a story of life change in your ministry through your MARC groups?
One that comes to mind immediately is a young man, retired early from the military due to some health things. And God just decided to kick the slats out from underneath his life. And just a number of things. He came to us here very, very, very broken. Came to our men's conference back in 2021. And I arrived at the men's conference a bit late because I was doing a wedding. So I got there after the evening session. He was the first guy to walk out of the auditorium at the Cove. We're at the Billy Graham Conference Training Center there in Asheville. And he was just weeping. And we spent the next hour talking. I believe it was his point of conversion. Having grown up in the church, walked away from the church. And I invited him immediately to join one of my groups because I could just tell he was ready. And unbelievable life transformation. And being able to walk with him through just some really hard waters that he's in my group. He's getting ready to launch out. He's a magnet for guys that have just been broken by life, broken by circumstances. And he is a recruiter of men. And I'm moving him to the point of, why do you keep recruiting these guys and giving them to somebody else to pour into? You're ready. Do it. And if I could give you some details of his past, I would, but I can't. Due to confidentiality, but I cannot tell you that I've ever seen somebody radically transformed in the way that he has been. And he has sat around that table at Panera just asking real life questions and processing through lots of messes. But he and his wife now are there. He's actually asking to pursue eldership. Highly involved in our children's ministry, highly involved in just discipleship in just some very unique ways. And he and his wife are just reaching into areas of people's lives in very unique ways. Just very, very cool. Yeah. Yeah. He's a highlight of ministry for me. Just watching God use him.
Yeah. That's what it's all about right there, right? To get to see that and see the gospel take root into someone and change and transform them in ways that nothing else in life could. And so, audience and listeners, that's all that we have got time for today. And we always finish with that question to remind you, to let you know, this is why we do what we do. This is the power of groups. This is what it serves. This is why we do discipleship, to see that life transformation of people going from darkness to light, brokenness to wholeness in Christ, and to pursue that. And to just get to see that. And you know, what was so interesting about that story, Pastor Jeff, sorry, I just got to go back to it, is, you know, most people don't start a group because they're like, I don't know who would join my group. This guy is recruiting people like crazy. And you just keep them for yourself and start a group. I just find that incredible. And so thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thanks for coming on today, Pastor Jeff. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Love talking about Jesus. Love talking about discipleship. So anytime, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, guys, thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Build Groups podcast. Matt, we'll catch you later, man. Pastor Jeff, thank you. You guys have a good rest of your day.